Welcome to Foresight Friday Roundup, Foresight Health's podcast series for healthcare revolutionaries. Outcomes matter, customers count, and value rules. Hello again, everyone. This is Dave Berta, news editor at Foresight Health. Welcome to the first episode of Foresight Friday Roundup for 2021. What a year already. Am I right? Before Trump's domestic terrorist cell broke into the Capitol building, the healthcare industry was making big news. So on today's episode of Foresight Friday Roundup, we're going to talk about the breakup of Haven, the healthcare venture formed by Amazon, Berkshire Hathaway, and JP Morgan Chase, and three multi-billion dollar healthcare deals, Centene buying Magellan Health for $2.2 billion, AmerisourceBergen buying the drug wholesale business of Walgreens for $6.5 billion, and not to be outdone, Optum buying Change Healthcare for $13 billion. Who says healthcare is unaffordable? To tell us what all this means for the rest of 2021 are Dave Johnson, founder and CEO of Foresight Health, and Julie Murchison, partner at Transformation Capital. Hi, Dave. Hi, Julie. How are you doing this morning? Dave?
Well, first, Happy New Year, Dave and Julie, and also to all the Roundup listeners out there. How am I doing? I'm delighted to have 2020 hindsight. We're only a week into 2021, and it feels like more of the same, or even more of the same on an amplified level. So how am I doing? I can't wait until January 20th when Joe Biden gets inaugurated.
I think a lot of people feel that way. Julie, how are you doing this morning?
Yeah, you know, I've been warning everybody that 2021 was going to be different, light at the end of the tunnel, but bumpy. And this has been a tough week to process through, that's for sure. So I'm processing, I have to say. There's a lot.
Yep, sure thing. Thanks to both, and welcome to the first episode of Foresight Friday Roundup for this year. Before we talk about Haven and all these mega deals, tell me how you celebrated the start of the new year. Dave, how did you ring in 2021?
Oh, for Terry and me, it was very low key. We cooked a nice meal. We binge watched on several episodes of the Gilmore Girls and had a toast at midnight to bid good riddance to 2020 and welcome in 2021.
All right. Julie, what were you doing when the clock struck midnight? Anything?
I think Dave and I were on the same program. We had a great dinner and we played some online games with a family who we usually spend New Year's Eve with on the East Coast. So that was a little bit bittersweet, but I was fast asleep on the couch with the dog by 11 and my kids made it through midnight. So God knows what happened that night.
Classic. Well, we binge watched this series on Netflix called Bridgerton. And it was basically a soap opera set in 1813 British high society. And there wasn't anything on any cholera outbreak. So I was a bit disappointed. So,
Dave, any scenes of British Army, you know, burning down the White House in 1813, 1814 from the War of 1812?
No, unfortunately, yeah, that would have taken it in a totally different direction, but definitely more timely. Speaking of disappointment, let's talk about the breakup of Haven. Dave, give us a little background on Haven, what it was supposed to do, and why it didn't work.
T.S. Eliot ends his poem, The Hollow Men, with the often quoted stanza, "This is the way the world ends, not with a bang, but with a whimper." This is the feeling I have as the last of the air drains out of the once promising Haven balloon, announced with much fanfare 3 years ago this month by its three superstar CEOs, Jamie Dimon at JP Morgan, Warren Buffett at Berkshire Hathaway, and Jeff Bezos at Amazon. Haven's simple but powerful goal was to provide employees and their families at the three companies with simplified, high quality, transparent healthcare at reasonable costs. Why didn't they get there? Like all corporate failures, the reasons were both internal and external. Let's focus on the internal first. The sheer task of aligning health benefits across three enormous firms slowed progress and added complexity. Many of Haven's multiple initiatives, they had something like 75 projects, required the sign off of all three sponsor companies, can you spell bureaucracy? Also, there were different levels of CEO support. By all accounts, Jamie Dimon was the only one of the three CEOs who actively participated in pushing Haven's agenda forward. Maybe most importantly, competition from the sponsors themselves, particularly Amazon, in multiple areas, from pharmacy services to on-site clinics to virtual primary care to telehealth, got in the way of Haven pursuing those initiatives. You know, when Bezos said Amazon learned a lot from Haven, I don't think he was kidding. An example of that and the lack of communication occurred when Amazon announced Amazon Care, its program, employee health program. Haven had been working on a similar initiative called Starfield and didn't find out about Amazon Care until the public announcement. Also, questions about Haven's leadership and priorities. Did they bite off more than they could chew, for example, which they probably did? Let's now turn externally. Big as they are, the three companies did not have sufficient scale in the regions where they operated to change market dynamics. Speaking of market dynamics, I can reduce the competitive response of big payers and big providers to Haven to the playground taunt, I don't want to and you can't make me. Payers didn't share data with Haven. Without good data, it's impossible to define and solve problems. Providers wouldn't budge on prices. They were between the proverbial rock and hard place. Haven also had external competition for many upstart business models. In the end, it turns out that healthcare was simply too big a problem for Haven to solve. They came, they tried, they failed. It's time to play taps.
Yeah, some adults never leave the playground, do they?
Most adults.
All right, Julie, what's your read on why Haven failed and what does it mean for healthcare innovation and disruption for the rest of this year and beyond?
Well, first of all, I would say that they didn't fail, they quit. You actually need to have really tried something to fail. And Dave's right. They tried small things. They dabbled in some pilots. But, you know, they really quit. It was too big. It was too complicated. And you know, we learned this lesson from Revolution Health over a decade ago. And our very soon-to-be outgoing president enlightened us after the first attempt to kill the ACA. It is unbelievably complex, our system. So, you know, the chief transformation officer was from Atrium, put out a tweet, was the first tweet I saw on this. It said, this is a go big or go home play. And we know that bigger isn't always better. But the one thing I'll say about big here is that when this first was announced, to Dave's point, it was big. And I was talking to a lot of leaders in the industry about their questions and their thinking and wanting to understand what Haven was doing. And there was a lot of anxiety around it. There were, you know, task force put together to understand it. So Haven did the industry a huge favor by really trying to inspire, well, they didn't try, but they inspired a lot of anxiety that pushed organizations to really think about their strategy. Haven also did the industry a huge disservice by putting something together that was probably set up to fail and wasted a lot of time and anxiety in the industry. So pros and cons. There's an enormous space between the kind of pilots that Haven was working on and the boil the ocean approach that a lot of other people take. And I think at the end of the day, these three organizations didn't have the patience to really drive forward what needs to happen, which is, you know, the kind of reform and the kind of innovation that is happening now today. And I think to Dave's point, Amazon learned a lot from it and is now building a whole business. But the good news is that the innovation really does live on. We're seeing real companies every day roll up into larger companies with more market share to actually take on the price wars among providers. We're seeing health systems develop virtual care offerings and pitch them to health plans. Like, what planet are we on right now? So we're seeing some pretty incredible innovation, of course, married with what we've experienced in the last year, come out of what Haven has started to drive as thinking through in the industry.
Thanks, Julie. Dave, do you agree with any of Julie's silver linings of this experience?
Well, I think Julie's characterization of the Haven announcement and sort of the breathtaking quality it had is right on the money. I mean, they kept quoting Warren Buffett's observation that healthcare is the great tapeworm on the U.S. economy, and they were going to fix it. So yeah, it sent shudders through an industry that has a lot to be worried about in terms of its consistent inability to deliver better outcomes at lower costs with better customer service. And a lot has happened on the positive side in terms of innovation, but I think I'll use my little bit of time here to go back to the beginning. And we haven't talked about Atul Gawande yet. I wrote a piece called Gawande's Gift at the time that postulated that he could be an inspired choice, even if he was an unlikely one, given his lack of corporate experience. And the reason I thought that was Gawande arguably is the most powerful thought leader in healthcare, and his ability to be an advocate for progressive reform, particularly in areas like end-of-life care. I mean, his book, Being Mortal, is still one of the most powerful books I've read. I thought that if Haven used him as sort of the bully puppet mouthpiece, that they could have been sort of this moral force for change. Instead, Haven went the other way. It was an incredibly secretive company. I mean, they didn't even have a name for the first year. As Julie said, they did multiple small initiatives. And I really do think it is this. I really like this observation. It was a go big or go home play, and they played small ball. And I can't help but wonder if that just wasn't a real lost opportunity, the opportunity to stake out the high moral ground on value and push it from there.
I'm so glad you raised Atul, and what you just said is right on the money. And it was one thing when Atul left. It was another thing, though, when Jack Stockard left within a year after being hired. And that said to me that this is not a commercial organization that's operating in a way that will take on commercial innovation. So your comment about Atul really taking the moral high ground for them would have been a brilliant move, because it was clear that something was going on there that wasn't typical.
Yeah, great point. Great point.
Yeah, for me, I remember covering the announcement and realizing that was the first time I ever typed the word tapeworm on a keyboard. And I didn't know if it was one word or two. So we all have our memories of the experience, right? Well, thanks to both of you for that great analysis of the Haven situation. Now let's talk about these three mega deals, all announced earlier this week. Julie, give us kind of the cliff notes on each of the deals, what you think the parties are trying to achieve with these transactions.
Sure. First, I'm going to talk about strategy. I'm not going to bore us all with the mega dollars and cents, although that's clearly what a lot of this is about. And I'll definitely start with my favorite, which is Centene's acquisition of Magellan. You know, Centene's become one of the largest players in the government-sponsored health sector. It was amazing, actually, to look at this with the deal. They have 25 million managed care members, roughly half of them enrolled in Medicaid plans. So if you think about it, they're serving 1 in 15 Americans today, covering 1 in 15 Americans, which is pretty incredible. So, you know, for them, it means it's time to diversify. And their core business has grown significantly. So, you know, Neurdorf has huge plans to build next generation specialty care capabilities. And we know with their recent hire, Brian Sivak, that they're really trying to go long on technology and technology enabling their business. So with Magellan, you know, they're really expanding into mental and behavioral health. And you know, well, they'll gain another, I don't know, 5.5 members in their government-sponsored business. They're going to gain 41 million members on the behavioral health platform. So that's really meaningful to the business. And most importantly to me, I think they're starting to really walk down this line of integrating physical and mental health care. So for that, I love this deal. Now, on the other hand, the Walgreens, AmerisourceBergen deal that was announced this week, this is so interesting. As you may know, Walgreens owns 30% of AmerisourceBergen. So there are already two companies who know each other extraordinarily well. AmerisourceBergen's growth has slowed over the last 4 years significantly. So it's really a growth play for them. And they're buying WBA's drug wholesaler business in Europe and Egypt. So it's global growth for them. And while WBA is going to get some capital to invest in their retail business, which is already weakening with competitors like Amazon and Walmart, but you know, it's been further hit with a pandemic for sure. So they're going to be looking at how they reshape retail. And we're seeing announcements from companies like VillageMD almost weekly about expansion with Walgreens. So I think there's a lot in the works there. And last is Optum Change Healthcare. And this shouldn't surprise anybody. The overall goal, they say, is to leverage all the data they have to help physicians control costs and improve care. But this is just another story of growth for Optum, which, you know, is over 50% of United Health Group's revenue today. And it's a pretty logical move. Change Healthcare processes $2 trillion worth of claims each year across 30,000 customers. That's a lot of data. And Optum has some pretty incredible data analytics. So this marriage will put Optum analytics kind of at the top of its game, at the top of the industry. And at the same time, you know, Change and Optum actually do have some complementary businesses. So a lot of people say the crux of the deal is all the provider relationships that Change has that it can bring to Optum to, you know, further put it up on the ranks. Creates an even larger powerhouse for Optum, which will represent a larger threat for much of the industry. But on the flip side, I look at this and I say, okay, Optum's going to be even bigger and be an even bigger part of the M&A machine. So here we go.
Thanks, Julie. Dave, do any of the deals surprise you? More importantly, what do they tell you about the healthcare market in 2021? What are the lessons we should be taking away from these deals?
Well, first and foremost is the macro forces that have been driving valuations to almost insane levels. You know, we've got the highest valuation levels that we've seen, well, really ever. So deal flow is still going to be white hot as these valuations continue. And, you know, reasons underlying the high valuations are, I do think we've seen some real breakthrough transactions. Livongo IPO from 2019 is maybe the one that stands out for me, that have shown what happens when a company can demonstrate better outcomes at lower cost with attribution. And healthcare is such an enormous space that even marginal improvement with positive revenue implications is sending valuation skyrocketing. So, and we've seen, you know, since then, Oak Street come out with a multi-billion-dollar IPO, One Medical as well. So we've got some real success stories on the sort of the new age healthcare, and that's spilling over into the traditional space. Also, the reemergence of these special purpose acquisition companies, SPACs, means there's even more money chasing deals around. So I think we're going to continue to see the big deals. And then, as Julie mentioned in her in our discussion on Haven, is in healthcare, bigger doesn't necessarily mean better. And of the three transactions like her, I'm most excited about Centene's acquisition of Magellan, because they really are probably leading the country in bringing parity between mental health and physical health. And I've always thought it was the dumbest thing in the world that we treated those areas of healthcare separately. Walgreens is basically trying not to be taken over by KKR. So I think they're doing everything they can do to push up their valuation. And, you know, everybody talks about big tech getting into healthcare, the Amazons, the Microsofts, Googles, and so on. And that's happening. In fact, they probably have to be in healthcare just to keep their double-digit profit margins. But I still look at Optum and everything that it's assembled as potentially the ultimate go big or go home play. I mean, they've got all the elements. The question is really, can they internally execute to put pressure on the big players in healthcare, the payers, the providers, the device manufacturers, pharma, and so on, to fundamentally change supply demand dynamics? And if I were to pick anybody, I think it would be Optum is going to be the one that does that. So yeah, you know, we're already off to a fun start in the M&A arena, in IPO arena. So I think there's going to be a lot more. So buckle your seatbelts.
Got it. Thanks, Dave. Julie, anything to add to Dave's comments?
I remember the days when Andy Slavitt was put in charge of trying to make sense of all the assets that United had purchased that were now bundled under Optum and not integrated and not in a logical kind of go-to-market approach. And Optum's in a very different place today. They're buying with purpose, but there's going to be a lot of weaving together what's even going on in Change to really make what Optum's done with Change work. So know, there's a lot of netting to do, but I agree with Dave. It's the powerhouse power is there.
Thanks, Julie. All right. Now, as always on the roundup, let's talk about next week. Julie, we've seen a lot already this year, as Dave said. Will anything next week top this week?
Well, you might recall in the fall, I kept saying for a couple of weeks, I think we're going to see some more M&A, then it never came. So it all came crashing down this week, I'm very proud to say. But I'm going to call January M&A month. And I think we're going to see middle market roll-ups. As Dave said, we're going to see SPAC activity. I'm starting to see a lot more about how people are generally not thinking SPACs are going to make it throughout the year. So I think January is going to be a month of fervor.
Got it. Dave?
Julie took the M&A thunder away, and I think she's right on that. There's still just enormous questions on COVID and its sort of twin features, the virulent spread, particularly in California and Arizona right now. I mean, we set a record for number of daily deaths yesterday for the second day in a row, over 4,000. So the disease is continuing to ravage the country while we're gearing up for the vaccine distribution. And, you know, Biden has said one of his goals in the first 100 days is 100 million vaccine administrations. And I think we're going to be hearing a lot of talk about how that's going to happen under the careful guidance of Jeff Zients, who's the one that fixed healthcare.gov once it shot the pooch on its rollout. So I think we're going to be talking a lot about COVID and vaccines.
All right. Well, thank you, Dave, and thank you, Julie. That's all the time we have for today. If you'd like to learn more about the topics we discussed, please visit our website at foresighthealth.com. You can also find a recording of this podcast and all our podcasts on iTunes, Spotify, and other streaming services. Thanks for listening. I'm Dave Berta for Foresight Health.